This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. You know that one friend who always finds the best travel deals, picks the right cards, and somehow ends up in first class for the price of coach? Smart Travel is like that friend, but in podcast form. They cover all things travel finance, like which flight deals are actually worth booking and which are just clickbait, and how to plan group trips without blowing your budget or testing your friendships in the process. Travel smarter and spend less with the help of NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Are you still there? To delete this message, press 7. To save it in the archives, press 9. To hear more options, press 0.
What are you talking about?
Hi, Katie.
Hello, Erin.
Happy February.
Happy February. Can't believe it's February already, 2026.
Worst month of the year if you're in Canada. Unless you like to ski. I'm happy for all the skiers that are really enjoying February.
I do love to ski. I do love to ski. And it's been my plan to get a ski session in to reward myself for all of my hard work over the last month and a half. So stay tuned on whether or not my knees can handle it.
You should. You should ski. That's my fear. I used to ski when I was like in my 20s, but I'm afraid to now because I don't want to re-injure my knee.
Well, speaking of skiing.
It is the Winter Olympics.
It is the Winter Olympics. Right now, as this episode drops, we are in the midst of the Winter Olympics in Milan and Cortina d'Ampezzo.
Yes.
How do you say this?
I don't know. I think you're close, though.
We've just been saying the Olympics in Milan.
Yeah.
But there's more to talk about on this.
Are you an Olympics watcher? Like, are you watching? Is this something you do?
So I used to be a pretty big Olympics watcher, especially the Winter Olympics. These are my personal fave because so much of the sporting that I did as a kid was winter sports that are in the Olympics. So I did ski racing and I did speed skating. So those are pretty exciting for me. And I do love like freestyle snowboarding. And also I did an internship at CBC where they go all out for Olympic coverage. And when I was doing my internship there, it was during February in 2014, maybe Sochi, I think, but it was huge. So I was pretty stoked on the Olympics then. So genuinely, I think I do really like the Winter Olympics.
I'm famously not a sports person, so I can't say I really ever watched the Olympics, winter or summer.
It helps when you have a personal tie to the sport that you're watching.
For sure. And listen, I'm not like, I can get into sports. The times that I get into sports are when Toronto teams are doing really well, as you know.
Yeah.
So when the Blue Jays did really well last year, I got on board. But it's fun because like I'm usually surrounded by people who know the sport really well. So, and that makes watching better, right? When you're with people that like know the sport because they can tell you things and like contextualize it a bit. I'll usually watch like a little bit here and there just in the background, but I'm not like very locked in to the Olympics. I do get in the feels for the athletes, just like knowing how big this is for them.
You kind of can't help it.
Like I do get on board with that. Like I'm proud of them, even though I don't know them or really watch their sports. I'm proud of them.
So Erin, if you were to be an Olympic pro in an alternate universe, which sport would you be a pro in?
Surfing.
Ooh, interesting.
I'm not good at surfing, but like I think it's cool to be good at surfing. So I think I would be a surfer. Or, I mean, this is so cliche. I feel like every little girl in Canada wants to be like an amazing figure skater. Like when I was growing up, that's like what I watched during the Winter Olympics with my family. I loved the figure skating. It's just such a beautiful sport. It's definitely a thing. Canadians, we do get really into the figure skating.
Yes, we get really into the figure skating. We get really into the hockey. And then I think there's like a pretty solid ski community in Canada, too.
What would be your sport?
So I think mine would be ski ballet, which sadly ended in 1994. It doesn't exist anymore due to lack of interest in 1994. because this is when also extreme sports became like available. So like the aerial winter sports, like freestyle snowboarding and ski jumps and freestyle skiing and all of that. So people just did not want to watch ski ballet anymore. But it is one of the most iconic sports of all time, where people are just like flipping and spinning and stuff, just on their run down the hill. It's beautiful. I love it. It's highly retro. I would want to be a ski ballet pro. I'm really close to it, honestly. I was really close to it when I was a big skier. I can do 360s down the hill. Like, oh. I could probably flip over my poles if I wanted to.
I really encourage anyone listening to look up on YouTube a video of ski ballet. It's quite something.
Yes, it's amazing. Okay, so in this postcard, we want to talk about the Olympics that are going on right now because there's lots to unpack. So let's talk about what's going down. So the mayor of Milan is pretty thrilled about the Olympics coming this year. He told Condé Nast Traveler that the Olympics stand to be a, quote, splendid showcase and a significant step forward for the city. It's scheduled to feature 116 medal events in 16 disciplines. And one new discipline was added this year. Can you guess what it is, Erin?
I have no idea.
It is ski mountaineering, aka SkiMo. Have you heard of this before?
I've never heard of this. Oh, is this like backcountry skiing?
Kind of. So it's literally climbing up hills on skis or on foot and then skiing down.
So it is like backcountry skiing if you don't have a helicopter.
Yeah, basically.
I do. I mean, you know, we know people out in BC here in Canada who do that. Like, and a friend of mine, she used to have to climb the mountains to ski down them, but now she's sponsored by North Face, so now a helicopter brings her up.
Yeah, I think in certain events though, like, it's sort of skiing if you don't have a chairlift, like you're going down a regular ski hill. So sometimes they have courses set up on ski hills, and I don't know if this is what they've done in the Olympics, but they have just courses where you have to like kind of run around barricades with the skis on your back because they don't have like the mountain. So you can either do it on a mountain or you can do it on like a regular ski hill. But either way, you're climbing up a hill in like ski boots, which is like every skier's worst nightmare.
Yeah.
Apparently, this is like one of the hardest sports out there. And people who compete in this have crazy lung capacities and they have to train for altitude and all this stuff. So this is the new ski event in the Winter Olympics this year.
Cool.
So the total investment for the Olympics is expected to be around 1.3 billion euros, which is $4.7 billion. And this budget is covering a total of 98 projects, 74 of which are directly related to the Winter Games. And tickets to watch the Olympic Games range somewhere between $33 to $3,000. And what do you think is the most expensive game to watch?
Probably the most popular sport, which, like, if you're Canadian, is hockey.
That's exactly it. It's the men's hockey final. So
shocker.
Not the women's.
Not the women's. I'll always be salty about this.
I tried to look up what was the cheapest game to watch, and I could not figure it out. But I think the medal games are always going to be more expensive.
Yeah.
And I also wonder if, like, the ones where you have a really shitty view of the game that's happening, like, I think of all the ski ones where you're just standing at the bottom of the hill and don't really get to see anything but somebody crossing the finish line. Like, do you,
that's
get,
a good
you
point.
Get a discount?
Yeah, maybe that's why hockey is so popular, because, like, it's fun to watch and you can really watch it.
So notably, as I mentioned, it's being hosted in two cities, and it's actually the most widespread Olympic Games in history in terms of geography. So these two cities, Milan and Cortina d'Ampezzo, are about 250 miles apart by road, and the venues for the Games span in a variety of spots in between across nearly 8,500 square miles. Getting in between everything could take more than a few hours by car, and that's on remote, wintry roads. So it's going to be a journey if you're going to visit any of these games and want to see, like, numerous sports.
It's interesting because, yeah, like, it's 5 hours by train between Milan and Cortina d'Ampezzo. But I was wondering this because Milan, they might get snow there, but it's not really, like, a wintry place. Cortina d'Ampezzo is. That's, like, a mountain town.
Yeah, I'm assuming the mountain sports are going to be in Cortina, and then all of the like rink sports are going to be in Milan, probably.
Yeah.
And so that means that there are 6 Olympic villages throughout the region. So if you are wanting to find a date at one of these Olympic villages as an athlete, it's probably going to be harder this year because there's a
commute
spread
involved.
Out everywhere. There is a commute involved. No late night you up texts are happening. Here's an interesting statement from the Olympic Committee about this. This approach allows the maximum use of existing venues, reducing the need for new construction, and as a consequence, minimizing the carbon footprint. So it's spread out, which they're saying is going to be a more sustainable sort of way about going about things. There's more to say on this. But interestingly, in January, CBC, who I told you is like very like rah-rah Olympics, there was an article that came out from them that said that this is set to be a very muted Olympics, saying that with venues spread across northern Italy, it's difficult to determine where is the center of the games or like what is the actual hub. CBC wants a big party, wants a big Olympics hub party. Also, they probably don't want to travel around everywhere.
It's interesting because from a like a tourism marketing perspective, Italy's kind of winning because they're showing off Milan and they're also showing off the mountainous region. So they're kind of getting a 2-for-1 out of it. But it
totally.
Is true as like an attendee. I actually think I know a family friend of ours is going. So I'd be curious to ask them, are you going to Milan or are you going to the mountains?
So on the note of sustainability, Milan has said that they're aiming to make this game, these games the most sustainable possible. So the torches use a low carbon fuel. The venues all run on renewable energy. 11 of 13 sites are existing or temporary structures. And the big builds that they are doing are planned to have second lives. So the new hockey arena will become a regular sports and entertainment venue. And the Olympic Village will turn into student housing for 8 nearby universities near the games. That's kind of interesting. I saw some commentary online that like locals didn't love the design of the Olympic villages. They said that they were almost like Soviet looking. But I guess too bad. Like those buildings are going to be there forever and there's going to be a bunch of students living in them.
I feel like it's very hard for dorm style buildings to really be aesthetic.
I know. It didn't occur to me that the Olympics were building actual like apartment buildings. Until like, I think a few years ago where I was like, I didn't think there were that many athletes to like house, but I guess there really is. They need to make entire buildings to house them all.
I'm going to get into this, but this is one of the things that makes the Olympics quite unsustainable is that they end up building a lot of infrastructure that doesn't end up used afterwards, which is why I think Milan is quite interesting, the fact that they've spread it out between 2 locations, because I think you could argue, I mean, we'll have to see what the debrief is after the games, but you could argue that it's spreading out the volume of people quite a lot, which could be better for local populations. So instead of having like all of the Olympic activity in Milan spread out between 2 places, like it might relieve some of the pressure on both locations, which could be a good thing, but it also involves like travel in between these locations. So
on that note, actually, in that same CBC article, they had a really interesting quote where they said, maybe Milano Cortina is the future of modern, lower impact mega events, less romantic for athletes and visitors, but more economical and environmentally sound for the hosts. So I can imagine there'd be a lot less waste in one place, a lot less pissed off locals in one place. So maybe this is sort of like the future of the games. So of course, hotel rates have climbed. Prices are basically at Fashion Week levels in Milan. And even the weeks before and after the games are still seeing like higher than usual rates. But you mentioned transportation. So this is like, I think, the biggest story to come out of these Olympic games, if we're talking about the scale of them. So given the widespreadness of the games, of course, there's been like a huge investment in transit, also in an effort to keep traffic from overwhelming local neighborhoods. So a big chunk of this Olympic budget has gone into things like shuttles from Milan to the mountain venues. There's been 46 new electric metro trains and major boosts to all regional rail services. They've extended public transit service operating hours till 2 a.m., trains are jumping from 15 a day to 2 an hour. There's new park and ride lots. Even Uber has involved 5,000 local drivers and designated pickup zones. So massive effort to keep everything running smoothly. And this is interesting because the local, like Milan is expecting 1.6 million spectators in just these 2 weeks. And it's being reported that locals are understandably unsure about what this will mean for the city, but some people are optimistic about it. So I looked at the spectator guide on the Olympic website to see like what they're suggesting to people who are coming to watch. And I noticed that there is an information for residents page. And so I clicked on it, and at time of recording, there isn't much on that page. It's mainly focused on how there's going to be an increase in traffic, and it just outlines extended hours for public transit. And then it sort of like politely asks that people avoid driving and use of public vehicles and to just generally stay informed about changes to traffic and road access. So generally, Milan and this area just doesn't want locals driving their cars during these 2 weeks.
I mean, we're going to get more into it, but this is like one of the problems with the Olympics is that in past examples, it has always impacted local life quite directly. And transit is a big part of it. I mean, I'm even worried about this. Toronto's hosting the World Cup this summer. And I'm reading more and more that it's just going to be a really rough few weeks in Toronto, like, because there's going to be so many people here. And most cities don't have the infrastructure to support an influx of especially 1.6 million people. So there's kind of no way around it. It's going to be hard for everyone.
That's why I think it's a good idea that everything's so spread out. But also, if I was like living in Milan, and like for 2 weeks, you have to adjust your schedule, I'd be kind of pissed.
Well, I know that during the Paris Olympics, I was reading like a lot of Parisians like purposefully planned to leave the city and like go on vacation at that time because they knew it was just going to suck being at home during that time.
Should get reimbursed for those vacation costs.
Luckily in Europe, a lot of people are vacationing most of the summer months anyways. Yeah. Because they have actually ethical PTO there.
Yeah. So that's kind of the gist of what's going down at the Milan Olympics at this time. I'd be curious to see if there's been any new updates. Like, I haven't seen anything yet at time of recording about like what's actually gone down in terms of transit, if any athletes are like stuck anywhere in the winter roads and like can't make it somewhere. So yeah, we're staying tuned for more updates, but at time of recording, have not seen anything yet.
Yeah. And there's usually quite a few debriefs that come out afterwards on the environmental front to see like how they played out compared to previous years. Because yeah, I'm going to now tell you about all of the concerns there are historically with the Olympics from an environmental perspective. I think it's important to say, like, this is something that I wondered. Why would a city want to host the Olympics? Like, it seems expensive. It seems like not very fun for the local population. So most host cities want to do it because they feel that it'll bring economic boosts. It also brings a lot of global attention, which is generally good for tourism. But the reality of this can be pretty complicated. So over the years, we've seen patterns around displacement, policing, sustainability challenges, and then just the massive environmental footprint that comes with hosting a global mega event. So yeah, I wanted to walk us through some of the main concerns and some examples in the past of how these concerns have played out in places. So the first one, of course, we've talked about it a bit, is the environmental impact. The Olympics just always have a massive carbon footprint. And this is because of all the construction that happens, the energy use, the garbage that's generated. And then international travel, it involves a lot of people like flying to this one location. So over the years, they've found that even games that are trying to be quote unquote green generate tons of emissions and large amounts of waste. In recent years, especially, it has become more like top of mind, I guess. Like every year, they're trying to do a better job of making it more sustainable. But like I was saying before, I feel like there's only so much you can do when you're hosting a mega event.
I wonder how many Olympic teams selected the carbon offsetting option
well,
on their
flight.
Well,
I hate to say it, but please don't do carbon offsetting through the airlines, folks. Find an organization you trust. It's a little greenwashy, the airlines, when they do it. So in London 2012, 3.3 million tons of CO2 were produced during the Olympic Games, which is comparable to the annual emissions of a small country.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And it's interesting because London was very focused on reducing their carbon output, but still ended up with a massive footprint, although better than previous games. Okay, so the next one, we've talked about this a little bit, and I'm excited to talk about the example because it's Canadian, but overbuilding infrastructure. So host cities basically always have to build new stadiums and arenas, and then villages that don't have long-term use. And this usually leaves behind costly, underused facilities that can end up draining public budgets. So Montreal's Olympic Stadium is the poster child for why people worry about hosting the Games. So Montreal hosted the Games and built this massive Olympic Stadium. It ran massively over budget. It actually has the nickname the Big O in Montreal because taxpayers spent literally decades paying off the debt for this stadium. And the stadium just has endless maintenance problems still. It has a roof that's never really worked, and today it's underused. It's a complicated building that people in Montreal argue over because no one knows what to do with it.
And this is the thing with Olympic buildings. They're always built in some fancy way. Like, they're not just like a regular building. They look special. I can only imagine that makes a whole myriad of weird, nuanced problems with these buildings when they have to like look a certain way. They're
designed
special.
It is funny because, yeah, like the stadium in Montreal, it's very recognizable. Like, I associate it with Montreal. When I lived there, I saw it like all the time in the distance. Like,
yeah.
You can see it when you climb the mountain in Montreal. Like, you see the stadium. But what's interesting about it is you never go. Like, I've never been to the stadium. No one has. Like, it's just there. There needs to be intention when these buildings are built, like, for what their purpose will be following the Games. Another big issue with the Olympics is policing displacement and housing pressure. Preparations for the Games tend to push residents out of their homes. This can be through redevelopment or evictions, and also just through rental price spikes. Landlords realize, like, if they flip their rental into a short-term rental, that they're going to make a lot of money during the Games. So it often leads to affordability issues for locals when it comes to housing. In 1996, this was all over the news with the Atlanta Olympics, because those Olympics caused nearly 30,000 people to be pushed out of their homes.
Oh my God.
And those people really struggled to find affordable housing afterward. And on top of that, about 9,000 unhoused people were illegally arrested, a move that hit communities of color hardest and then left long-term economic impacts. The big irony of this is that the Atlanta Olympics were framed as a catalyst for urban renewal.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So the next issue, we've talked about it a little bit, budget overruns. Basically, every Olympic Games exceeds its budget. This usually falls into the responsibility of the taxpayers. They end up with long-term debt that needs to be paid off. And this just means that money intended for the community needs to get diverted to Olympic-related projects.
When the Olympics aren't even happening anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Then there's strain on local infrastructure. We've talked about this too. Millions of visitors can overwhelm transit, roads, hospitals, city services, generally causes major disruptions for residents before, during, and after the Games. Paris 2024 was actually like a really good example of this, because I remember after those Games reading several articles about locals just hating it, just hating the whole thing. Transit was packed, there was heavier traffic, there was a strain on public services, and just like a general feeling of major disruption. And then finally, there's just uneven economic benefits. The economic benefits are usually the thing that the host city is like the most excited about. But the thing is, like, while tourism does spike, it's temporary. So a lot of local businesses and communities don't see long-term gains. The promised economic boost often doesn't match the reality. I think, like, for cities, especially like Milan and Paris and London, which are already like big tourist destinations, they don't really need like the added marketing of hosting the Olympics. I think it would like be more beneficial for cities that are maybe lesser known or that are really looking to drive tourism, because then you're definitely going to bring more visibility to those cities. But
and then you have an excuse to build infrastructure that drives more tourism in the future.
Yeah.
You can think
well, that would support more tourism in the future. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So it sounds very doom and gloom. I should say the Olympics have improved over the years, and host cities are definitely trying to tackle these issues, which is good to see. This is a difference compared to like the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, the athletes are only allowed to drink out of pasta straws and wooden forks.
Is that true?
No, I'm just kidding. Straws have been banned from the Olympic Village, so things are getting better.
Oh.
Just kidding.
Yeah, just to give an example, though, so the Paris 2024 Olympics were actually significantly more sustainable than past games. They cut their carbon footprint by using existing venues. So this is what Milan is doing. They relied a lot on renewable energy. They boosted local plant-based food. So they used a lot of that in like the Olympic Village. And they tried to build only essential new infrastructure. And then the plan was to turn it into affordable housing afterward. So I feel like every Olympics, they're sort of bringing in new ideas and testing new things to see what has impact. So over time, hopefully they'll continue to get more sustainable. But like I said, at the end of the day, there's just like only so much you can do when you're hosting a mega event. Sometimes I wonder, like, if it would make more sense to host these in cities that are, like, very used to very high volumes of people.
This is what came up to me when you were talking about people getting displaced. I was thinking, just in, here I go again, talking about my upcoming trip to Japan. I was thinking, like, the only place that I could see hosting millions of people would be Tokyo, because there's
Tokyo has hosted the Olympics.
There's so many people there. There's just like an abundance of hotels from what I can tell. You might not even need to like build an Olympic Village when you can just get everybody to just stay in the abundance of hotels that exist. All the Olympians are just in capsule pods the whole time.
I think the problem they would have, though, is that they have too many tourists now. So.
Yes. Yeah.
So now, even though they have the infrastructure to support like large volumes of people, it's like, can they support all the tourists plus all the Olympic attendees?
Yeah. Anyways. Where else would you imagine that happening, though? Like, where else could host?
I mean, originally I thought like, okay, like, cities in Asia that are really used to like moving people well. Like it is a fact, at least in my lived experience, that a lot of cities in Asia are just better at like handling large volumes of people. They just have better like transit built out. They have smaller housing than we do in North America, so they can fit more volume into city centers. So that like makes me think they would be better equipped to host a mega event. But then at the end of the day, like when you bring millions of people, like that's just such a huge jump in the amount of people. I don't even know if like that would work.
Yeah.
Even if they already have strong infrastructure.
Population of Toronto is 2.7, almost 2.8 million people. So like almost half of Toronto's population is going to Milan.
And imagine that amount of people like coming to Toronto.
That's crazy.
Our public transit already barely works. Like it can barely support local residents. And so it just wouldn't work. Like I would be upset if they wanted to host the Olympics in Toronto. I hope that never happens because it would not be a nice experience for local
Like I wonder
people.
If you could do it in a Dutch city where you encourage all of your attendees to
cycle
to the games. But then the roads would be crazy. Just too many
people. Well, you know they host, like, they have an F1 track in the Netherlands.
No.
So, cool. Yeah. So they have an F1 track there. And I have some friends who are very into F1. So when I was last in the Netherlands, I was talking to some family members about it because they do watch it because there's a Dutch driver. His name is Max, who's like, do you know about him?
I might have. I think he's like the guy, right?
Yeah,
like
but he's controversial because he's very Dutch. He's very blunt. Okay. So a lot of people don't like him, but Dutch people love him. Anyways, so we were chatting about the F1 track in the Netherlands, and my family member, Ott, he was like, everyone cycles there. Like, you can't drive there. You have to cycle. You cycle like 20 kilometers to get there. And then there's just like thousands of bicycles. They set up all this infrastructure for people to leave their bikes, but easier than cars, like easier to handle thousands of bikes and thousands of cars. You might be onto something. The Netherlands might be good at hosting a mega event.
I can also just imagine like the Skycam footage of just like thousands of bikes just showing up to the games.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, I used to bike to school when I lived in Groningen in the north of the Netherlands, which is a very like bike-centric city. They don't allow cars in the city center, so you can only cycle if you're going like around the city center. And during like peak hours when I would bike to school in the morning, like it would be kind of scary cycling because there'd be so many bikes. And you're like, I got to keep the same speed. I got to have my signaling locked down. Like you kind of got to be careful when you're biking with so many people also biking around you. So I would worry about like people not used to biking in those situations, like because
you have to know the rules of the road.
Yeah, people complain about this in Amsterdam, tourists that are cycling that don't know how to cycle in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, we've talked about the good, we've talked about the bad, but at the end of the day, the Olympics are special. So I don't want to be like a complete hater. I'm not a complete hater.
I'm not a complete hater, you know, either. I'm just skeptical.
Yeah, just skeptical. That's a good way to put it.
We're Olympic skeptics.
Yeah. This is one of those things where it's like, I think it's better to talk about the problems with it because that brings more visibility and will hopefully lead to more effort to make them better from a sustainability perspective, because the Olympics are not going to stop. Like, they're not going to get canceled. No. So I think the best path forward is to just bring more visibility to how they could be better, because that's really the only option. And it is like, it is just, it's cute. You know, like, do you ever look at humans and you're like, oh, humans are so cute. Like, that's what I think about the Olympics sometimes. Like, yeah. It's just cute to see the teamwork, the human motivation, the excitement. Like, it's just cute.
I think that's what I like about it. Like, I genuinely get excited watching people who, especially when you see stories of like athletes who've been in the games for a while, and then you've got like the young up and comer who's challenging them. Like, that's always exciting to watch too. Yeah. So I still like watching the Winter Olympics. I just like winter sports.
Yeah. You like coldness.
Yeah.
Would you travel to see the Olympics?
I don't think so. I think I get a lot more out of it from watching it on my TV.
Yeah.
The production around the Olympics, the television productions, are always incredible. CBC does a great job. And you get way more of a good view of the athletes, like at the starting line. You get all these nice little packages that you can watch where you get to learn more about the athletes. I just think the production value of the Olympics on TV is just so good that there's no need to just go and be part of the 1 million humans there.
Yeah, I think I feel the same.
If I was an athlete, I think it'd be way more exciting. Mm-hmm. But like an Olympic athlete. But I'm not. So.
Or if I had a family member or a close friend who was an Olympic athlete, yes, I would attend in that case. Yeah. Are you excited for the World Cup?
I don't care about the World Cup.
This is so interesting because it is true that like Canadians and Torontonians, like, we're not big football, aka soccer people, but soccer is huge. Like, I think this is going to be a problem because I think people are underestimating the power of the World Cup. Because I was living in Europe during the World Cup twice, and it is bonkers. So I think I worry that Toronto is not prepared.
I don't know if we're prepared because I am not a big soccer girl. I mean, soccer was a big thing for people who, like growing up, everybody was on a soccer team. So it might just be a me thing. But I was in Denmark when the World Cup was happening. It wasn't being hosted in Denmark, but Denmark was like playing or something like that. And just in the streets of, I think it was Copenhagen that we were in, and they had like big screens set up in these squares and people were outside selling like Denmark merch and stuff. Like just in a city where it wasn't even being hosted, it was huge and like taken over the entire city. So
football,
I imagine it's going to be hardcore.
It is considered the biggest sport in the world. Up to like, I think I read 4 billion fans globally.
Yeah.
So...
Canada is not prepared because it's been in a hockey bubble for so long.
I know. I do find it strange that Canadians aren't into it, but we don't really have teams. So that's probably part of it. For a second, I was like, maybe I'll get a ticket. Like, because when else could I go to the World Cup? Like, not that I'm a football fan, but it's going to be here. I live here. I might as well like go. Saw the ticket prices and was like, nope.
What are the ticket prices?
Oh, it was like hundreds of dollars.
Oh,
yeah.
It
was wild. I'm not fan enough for that, so.
Just get the World Cup to sponsor you as a travel influencer.
Ooh, maybe there's like media events happening. I can be like, bring me the self-proclaimed
totally.
Not sports person.
You should look into this.
Hey guys, Aaron Miller here from Armchair Explorer, and I just wanted to let you know that our new series is out now. We've got kite skiing across Antarctica, Aboriginal storytellers, and the craziest whitewater race in the world. We're going on a bucket list hike across Italy. We're going to the fjords of Norway in search of the Northern Lights and lots, lots more. Our goal is to take you on the trip of a lifetime every single week. You can find Armchair Explorer on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're listening right now, and at voyescape.com.
Hi, I'm Pauline Frommer, host of the Frommer's Travel Podcast. We post new episodes weekly, detailing the kinds of money-saving tips and cultural insights that will make your trips richer without making you significantly poorer. We do so by interviewing real travel experts like TV host Samantha Brown, Frommer's authors from around the globe, and such public figures as Free Solo's Alex Honnold. It's a fun travel party. I hope you can join us.